Following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right. Hey, it is that time of the week again, the best Tuesday I've had all week, and it's time for the True Wealth Radio Show, and I am stoked to actually be back in studio. Had like 2-3 weeks out, 1 week back, and then the next week get sick and actually don't make it in.
Everyone got sick.
Yeah, it was really something. I'm happy to be kind of on the other side of it, though not fully over. It's still kind of clearing.
Really?
Still a cough that's clearing, but I mean, my energy is largely better and stuff. But Man, I mean, like in the middle of July in a heat wave and still pulling that off? Come on.
I know, that never happens.
I'm like, that's no fun. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but I'm glad to be here. And Matt, I'm glad you're here too.
Yeah.
So I guess we're going to talk about money today and finance.
Perfect.
And stuff, but maybe not directly as I understand.
Okay.
As I'm looking at, so let me for all of our listeners,
what's the news cycle been around lately? Like we gotta ride the coattails
on
this thing.
So here's what happens a little bit. Okay. There's some show prep for sure.
Yeah.
Right? But it's a variety show. We talk about a lot of stuff and it's kind of like, well, what's relevant and what comes up as we talk, but we often start with a theme. Now, Matthew likes a good theme.
I do. And I'm like, how do we go on the radio show and not talk about what everyone else is talking about? Right?
Like, impossible.
You can do it. Like, we all know that someone.
We won't.
Yeah.
And a lot of this, I think, interestingly enough, I kind of stayed out of the way and said, well, what is interesting to you today?
Yeah. Well, so I looked at this and I'm like, well, obviously, we're financial advisors, right? And so,
weird, yes.
Yeah, we are always looking at the market. And when the assassination attempt took place, in the hours that followed that, you know.
Hint, this is kind of part of the topic, just
it is.
So you know.
Yeah.
Matt just totally dropped it without dropping it. Right?
I did. But I'm you know, kind of reeling on what just happened. And then my mind goes to, well, what's the stock market going to think about an assassination attempt? And what's going on throughout the world? So I started looking at the different markets, right? Because the Asian stock market, I think, was trading when that happened, mm-hmm. if I remember right. And then Europe is trying to figure and sort everything out. And typically, the stock market moves really quickly to news cycles. And so I'm starting to do research, like what's going to happen when things open.
I'm smiling right now because I'm going to hijack the heck out of Matt's show.
Are you really?
God.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, you're going to love this. Maybe.
And so, you know, my initial gut reaction was, well, surely the markets aren't going to like the uncertainty of the political tensions and all the concern. So surely the markets are going to open lower, right? No. They didn't. Monday comes around and there was a pretty good day in the markets. And then today was a really good day across the board for the most part. And so there was a jump in volatility, like, which is just kind of a measure of like how uncertain,
how wide the trading range is. That's kind of what volatility means in the short term, is like, oh, well, the spread up or down increased.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we did see that happen. And so then what I wanted to bring to the show today was, I mean, we've had assassination attempts in the past. And
been a while, but yeah.
Yeah. And so what happened back then in the stock market? What happened this time? And kind of what can we expect as investors moving forward?
Okay. And I'm going to
hijack that.
I'm going to hijack that. I'm going to try to bring some different perspective to it, because I think the news cycle way to do this is, well, you know, what does this mean and for the markets, right? But the I'm reminded of like the really stupid accidental meme in Avengers when it's like, you know, where's Gamora? What's Gamora? You know, or no, who? You know, then who? And then somebody gets like, what is or why is Gamora? You're like, what? And but really, there's kind of a hidden Boy, that's a dumb reference.
You just had a nerd moment. That's okay.
I think the issue I'm trying to get at is sometimes we don't necessarily know the right question to ask. So let me ask a different question to you before we go too deep into the rabbit hole of past assassination attempts and so forth. First, what did you observe in the markets in the hours following this assassination attempt?
So, I mean, what I'm going to even detour off that slightly. One of the things that I saw, obviously, the Asian markets in particular, we saw a lot of money not flowing into the U.S. There was a pretty big downturn in how much money was coming into the U.S.
So that's that's an observable thing, as we saw a change in trend where less money was moving into the U.S. Okay.
Yeah.
What else?
We also saw, like I already mentioned, the volatility really rose.
So volatility rose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By the way, I'm asking these questions to Matt.
Yeah.
I got to give him a little grace here because I didn't prep him for this.
No. Right? Well, and when stocks opened, and it was because I noticed it because it was a company that I owned personally.
Mm-hmm.
There was a defense contract company that supplies ammunition, and it was up like 20% that morning.
Yep.
And so I'm like, well, that's weird. Why is that up? And then I look, and a lot of gun manufacturers were up 10% that day. And so that actually caught me off guard, surprisingly.
Okay. So this is, one, I think this is interesting for our particular demographic of listeners locally.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're watching this on video, remember that you're watching a radio show, and we have a local audience. And so we live in a rural community, and it's a pretty strong Second Amendment community.
Yeah.
Okay, and so that's just part of the culture here. If you're in an urban area listening to this, I'm just going to tell you, you probably don't get it.
Well,
right? You're just not going to get it because of the nature of your world is different.
But, so, do you want me to tell you why it caught me off guard?
Sure.
So, I look back in time and I think back to like when Obama was president, for example. There was a lot of uncertainty about gun regulation and, you know, would there be sweeping gun laws that would make guns more scarce, ammunition more scarce? People were panic buying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we saw gun sales go through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And what I noticed, even in the betting odds, because you can bet on who's going to win the presidential election.
Right.
The actual line swung largely towards Trump, where he might have been an underdog before. Now he was favorite to win the election.
Just as an aside, what that means is they're balancing
the book. Yeah.
It doesn't mean that the probabilities really change.
No.
It means that the way the betting is occurring.
Right. A lot of money's coming in on Trump to win.
A bunch of money came to a different side of the betting book, and so the odds changed.
Right.
That's what that means.
It's exactly what it means. Right. Yeah.
So, gambling books hedge.
They do.
Okay. And so that's what we just learned. We didn't learn that the odds necessarily changed. But go on.
So so we see this swing in momentum, right? And kind of a belief on what's going to happen when the elections come around. And I would have thought the opposite. Well, if a Republican takes office and maybe has gun measures that are a little bit more liberal and what you can buy, and there's not that scarcity concern, you would think that the gun manufacturers and the ammo manufacturers would have slid in trading, but they didn't.
So let me play a game with you.
Okay? Let's play
and
the
I'm
game.
I'm not going to overly lead the witness. I'm just going to kind of talk through. What if after an assassination attempt, there's already been some question about how...
Like civil unrest?
No, how strongly was President Trump going to back the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Then experiences a shot from an AR-style rifle at himself at a rally.
Personally, right?
Personally.
Mm-hmm.
Does that
make
him more nervous about guns and say, hey, someone shot at me. We got to get serious here.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, maybe less committed to the Second Amendment from a purist perspective. And so if you were handicapping with that in mind, the opposite could occur.
It's true. Yeah.
Right?
And this is why I feel like you cannot predict
Well, remember, future. It takes two players to make a market. You can buy your and a seller. And so when you're trying to handicap on this stuff, that's what makes it so challenging, is that
it really does.
The market has only so much information. Now, this is a really interesting time to what we should do. We'll take a pause to come back to this specific idea, right? So the specific idea I want to return to is the efficient market hypothesis. Sounds super nerdy, but it's not inherently super nerdy as much as it means something, okay?
I'm ready for it.
Right? And so what it means and what can we deduce from it, and then how might we understand market volatility?
Okay, I've got something to add to that, because we did see something happen today that really changed, and I'm going to leave it at that. We saw a big change today.
All right. Well, so stick around. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the efficient market hypothesis and what everything means.
Okay.
Until then, we'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. This is Matt Dixon. And if you want to catch us, you grab the podcast later by going to littlejohnfs.com and looking under the Educate section. Let's get that out of the way really quickly so we get back to what matters, which is the efficient market hypothesis.
Yes. Which is, drum roll please.
Yeah.
Basically, everything that's known about the stock is priced in. The stock market's already, it knows.
Yeah.
And so therefore, it's reflected in the price.
It is a theory that the price of a stock already reflects all known information. Now, if that theory were to be true, and I'm not saying it is, but let's pretend it is, and then somebody takes a shot at a presidential candidate. What changed?
Everything?
All of the things changed, right?
Right.
That's a pretty hard thing for the market to re-handicap.
Mm-hmm. And so it scrambles to readjust.
Yeah. And it's hard to re-handicap because, man, what are some of the things that have come out of this? I mean, the rhetoric isn't as simple as there was a failed attempt at the president.
Right. There's all sorts of talks about, was this an inside job? Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, did you let the guy get on the roof? And so there's obviously a huge investigation to see, what happened.
There's so many problems because, like, was it incompetence? Mm-hmm. That's a problem. Was it malevolence? That's a problem. What about the collateral damage? That's a problem.
Yeah, right? people died. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that part.
Right. And, and then there's even discussion about the folks may have known about the shooter well in advance. And they couldn't get their act
together to get it
taken care of.
Yeah, like, hey, there's a guy with a gun.
Yeah. and so this is really fascinating. A friend of mine's talking about, he's been in the telecommunications industry for a while. If he's listening, he'll, right? Anyway, he says, look, I've been involved in telecommunications. And one of the things that's interesting is companies like, and I'll just say, like in his example is like Motorola, mm-hmm. will sell a high-end secure communication system to a branch of government. And then they will sell a different system to another branch of government that's proprietary, and they don't actually crosstalk. We assume that everything connects to each other,
but they don't,
because it's a way to sell multiple contracts.
Right, so the police might have been on a whole different communication system.
That doesn't patch together with Secret Service, right?
Right.
So that's the issue. And if the Secret Service has the National Guard there, the National Guard may have their own system that's mm-hmm. different than theirs.
Right.
And you go, wow, so we're all issued equipment that doesn't crosstalk natively.
Right, and then there's so many other things to think about too, like do we actually know what the building looked like that the guy was on? Because some people are saying that there was a slant to the roof and that even if a guy was on top of it, the snipers next to Trump's stage couldn't have seen him anyway.
Yeah,
so,
which I don't buy simply because you should have had that information prior to the event ever occurring, so it would never have been like, surprise,
mm-hmm.
here we are doing this event, and this is an unsecure location.
Right, that would be a huge, huge overlook.
Well, again, it goes back to incompetence
yeah.
or willful negligence.
One
or worse would be a full-blown setup. Right. And I wouldn't put it past at this point. If it was a setup, it could have been because a person was more or less extorted into creating a hole in the security because, like, somebody takes their kid hostage or something. You know, right. They find an exploit, and that person doesn't want to do it. It's not like their desire was for that, but it's like, if you don't let this happen, bad things happen to you. And if you ever say anything, bad things happen to you, right?
Right.
So they can be extorted into something like that.
Yeah.
Okay? And so all these things, I'm not saying they are these things.
But you're saying
it could be. It's not out of the realm of possible.
Right.
So, of course, the market has to go, blah, 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 blah,
yeah.
Which is the technical way of saying, oh, crap, I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting to me in all of this is you look back on the assassination attempt to Ronald Reagan, right, mm-hmm. and JFK, and you mm-hmm. look at kind of what happened then. So, like, you look at JFK, for example, and there was a huge downturn in the markets following that.
Mm-hmm.
Markets were down almost 3% that day. But what's odd is in all of these circumstances, the market rebounded pretty robustly and pretty quickly in mm-hmm. all of these attempts. And we didn't even see a downturn in this event. Markets started high and they've moved higher.
Well, and of course it was an attempt. It wasn't successful.
That's true.
So
yeah.
That's number one, is that it ended up
even
being
when,
a alert, but not an alarm.
Right. But even after the Reagan attempt back in 81, the S&P was down 2%. But it also recovered those losses within a month.
So here's the thing that I just cannot help but bring up.
Yeah.
What do you think is one of the primary differences structurally between today and back then?
I would say just information moves so quickly,
yeah.
right? Like computers are doing a lot of the trading.
Internet.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
I mean, I think that there's a really, I almost think that you must look at
the structure of the way that the market is now.
The market yeah. I've said this for a long time. I should probably write a book about it and do homework to really get interesting in it. But consider that before the internet, the speed of information, and then once we had the internet, the way information changed, how quickly it moved, and then we start looking at how the speed of information accelerated. So, you know, you mm-hmm. went from pre-internet, you did memos. Post-internet, you did email.
Right.
Instant communication, right? And then after that, you went to from dial-up to broadband to wireless broadband.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went from starting to pick up speed to starting to put it everywhere to ubiquitous access largely across the United States. Now, that's not actually true, but it's for all intents and purposes true that you can be essentially anywhere you need to be and have broadband internet connectivity. With Starlink, you pretty well can.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing how fast information can now move. And so if we use that as a backdrop to understand some of the market movements, it wasn't as efficient then as it is today.
Right. And those little kind of quirks in the market often work themselves out. Like I mentioned, a stock jumped 20% on the news.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today it was down 5%. And so it's coming back to kind of where yeah. it was. And so it's like that information is coming through. Things settle quickly, and then we're kind of almost back to where yeah. we were.
Well, some of the information is rumor,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So, you know what the market knows about a stock? Rumors, right? And if those rumors turn out to be false, you know what it now knows? It was a false rumor.
And then
it
reprices.
But it's still adjusting
yeah.
the price.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
So, like, the efficient market hypothesis suggests that everything that's known about a stock is in there, but it doesn't mean that all the knowledge is correct.
Yep. Yeah.
Which is why I think one can argue maybe it's not actually an efficient market. Maybe we're arguing about semantics of like, well, the information the market's choosing to use
mm-hmm.
is what's reflected right now. And it doesn't know the future.
No, but it can guess, right? And we saw that.
It's
guessing on regulation.
Oh, yeah.
Largely. And we have seen that with this shift in thought that Trump might actually get reelected now.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen certain segments of the stock market kind of flourish and start to improve. And then, you know, oddly, we've actually seen tech kind of pull back a little bit. Some of the bigger tech companies, they haven't been doing quite as strong, I guess, as some of those smaller companies.
Well, I find that story's interesting that there's assets, you know, money sort of rotating out of mm-hmm. some of the biggest tech companies and right. rolling into smaller tech companies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what it remains to be seen if that's actually a good sign or not, but I interpret that as a good sign that the market movement is becoming more broad-based and not just contained in the seven biggest stocks on the planet.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see.
I did see, or I did notice, that oil and coal both got a little bit of a rally with mm-hmm. the news that Trump has now kind of moved into the favorite position here to win the election. So,
and that's correlated to the idea that the handicapping is now favoring
right.
Trump more.
It's like, well, if he's going to, you know, renew some leases that maybe didn't get renewed before, sure, that makes sense. That's something
they are
that
very different policies and for different reasons.
Yeah.
And I guess, I don't know. I mean, I don't really like to poke at like politics a ton, like on a partisan basis here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, kind of get their energy independence rapidly is hard to do. I mean, like, you're not going to do it without fossil fuels when we talk rapid.
Yeah.
Long term, is it good to be environmentally aware and you know, clean things up? I just don't see the downside to it. But the idea that we could somehow flip a switch and like we'd stop burning oil tomorrow mm-hmm. or coal tomorrow, like not without severe pain. Right. And not without like famine, because like we can't even run farm equipment. We'd starve if we did that. So there is a pragmatic approach to say, you know, we do need to, even if that's our desire, we got to figure out how to do that at a price point and a infrastructure point that doesn't kill us.
Yeah.
In the process.
Here's something I want to throw at you. Pick your brain on. So, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier in the show. So foreign investment in the U.S. markets.
Yeah.
Once this all happened, it's a lot more than you might think. It slowed down 15% immediately following the attempt.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we've talked about this a little bit on prior shows, the trade volume was way down.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, what are the implications there? What do you think it's kind of... What is it suggesting?
What that tells me is there's a lot less buyers and sellers. So the mm-hmm. gap between what someone's willing to pay on the top end and what someone is willing to sell could widen.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could see bigger price movements in stocks as a percentage.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's an interesting one is, you know, the depth of the market.
Mm-hmm.
Is this just a snapshot in time with fear surrounding
right.
it?
Yeah.
In which case we would see some more normalization in the coming days and weeks.
Right.
You know, I suspect we probably will. But certainly foreign policy does come into play. And mm-hmm. when you consider,
right,
is
because
the U.S. currency going to get stronger or weaker?
Well,
that's going to have a major sway.
Like you just said, Trump and Biden have very different approaches to global politics.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And the way that they handle things on a global scale. And so I think foreign investors, which that has a big pull on the market, how are they viewing the United States right now? And that's something I think that is worth monitoring.
And keep in mind, it's not just foreign investors like, oh, are there people in Europe or China that are like buying U.S. stocks in their
right.
retirement plans? And I think we're talking about like institutional and
yes.
sovereign wealth and
yeah.
that kind of money is like big, big dollars and mm-hmm. where it's moving in the system.
Right. right? That's what I'm looking
yeah,
at.
Yeah. I mean, but as an aside to this point, I mean, this is one of the large issues with when people say, oh, the U.S. is going to be kicked out. They're not going to be the reserve currency anymore.
To my
answer is like, well, there's a lot of countries that would prefer to be the reserve currency versus
sure,
the
they'd
dollar,
love to.
But it's going to take some time because there's not other currencies around that are currently deep enough. I mean, there's not enough in circulation to
yep.
really be able to accommodate a reserve status right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so do people want to change that? Or are there, you know, the folks that are kind of angling that direction? Yeah, I suspect so. But it's not something where you're just gonna be like, oh, you know what? If we screw this thing up, boom, it's over just like that. Like, well, it will unravel.
Right.
But it's not just going to be we flipped a switch more than likely. And that would require some weird stuff. Like, we're not going to wake up one day and be like, you know what? Bitcoin. Let's just do it.
Yeah. No. And here's, I think, a big misconception that a lot of people, especially who live in the United States, have. It's like they look at things. Inflation has been causing a heavy burden on a lot of people. And we have this just kind of natural opinion that, well, things are bad, right? Mm-hmm. Like, things are tough. But if you start to actually look at the economic data, it's like, well, how is GDP it's doing pretty good. Like, the economy's actually not doing bad on paper. So it's like
on paper.
Right. And
it
so
drives
it's like,
me nuts. Every time you create a government job, that goes to GDP.
Right.
But it also builds debt.
I know.
Right. You can't print money it's and it tough. Turns out printing government jobs does increase GDP.
Yep.
But it adds to the debt.
Right. And that's something I don't think we talk about either.
We don't.
What is the largest growing segment of our economy?
Government.
Government jobs.
Yeah.
And
I often remind folks, remember, the government is like that plant from Little Shop of Horrors,
mm-hmm.
right? Feed me, right? And it gets bigger and bigger until it like consumes everything around it.
Yeah, all the other plants just get consumed.
Yeah, I mean,
consumed.
The government does, it's fed by the private sector.
Well, and then the private sector companies that are dependent on the government payouts, right?
Yeah.
That starts to get a little muddy too, because the government doesn't want to see this private company fail because they get so much stuff from that company. So then you see the bailout money, and then the problem gets worse.
There's so many layers. You get into the fact that unions look to set minimum labor costs,
mm-hmm.
and then the largest companies have unions, so they set minimum labor costs, and then it gets legislated to increase minimum labor costs, and then small businesses have to also pay those labor costs. But at some point, it doesn't all get passed on. I mean, yes, it does, but some of it gets passed on in the form of less consumer choice because companies simply fail because, and this is the lost point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not every business scales, right? The mom and pop shop that rely on the stable cost of everything get priced out of business when you add more regulatory burdens, right? We talk about this in our office. This is just an aside for our firm, right?
Mm-hmm.
People would say, why are you still taking on new clients and still growing, right? And there are a number of reasons, not to at least which include, I think, healthy things grow. And if you're doing a good job, you want to keep growing. But as more and more financial regulations show up, consumers see two choices occur. Either you run to the path of do it yourself using very low cost structures, where you buy a chassis from somebody and you're shopping for the lowest cost for that chassis that's acceptable to you,
mm-hmm.
right? Great, go buy index funds, set it and forget it, you know, pay a dollar a year for your account or whatever it is, and then just wait 30 years, wake up and hope everything works out. But you're literally on your own. You have to do the phone calls or online. Everything is directed by you.
Right.
Or you try to work with an advisor so that they can help you and guide you and try to, you know, plan with you and make things more efficient. But then you see the minimum account sizes go up more and more and more and more. And that's because the cost to stay legal continues to rise.
Mm-hmm.
And so you either add more customers so that you can have enough revenue to pay for all the additional personnel to stay legal, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the legal compliance side of things. You make the customers that you do have, you keep kind of moving up market so that you have more wealthy customers, but nobody else can afford to work with you. Some combination of the two, or you end up going away, right? And you see, because the most dangerous model, this is just, I don't know how we got here, but I'm going to just say, the toughest model I see in financial services and insurance is, hey, a young person gets started, bring all your family and friends over, try to make a living at it, and then when you fail, some of those customers are going to stick with the company for a while, and that's how they're going to make their money.
Hmm.
They're counting on attrition of the sales force. Bring in the sales force. They build some people up. When the salesman fails out, then a senior person will absorb those relationships and try to press on, and that's how the companies build.
Hmm.
And I don't like it.
Yeah.
Like I hate to see it. I think it's a way that you burn people out. And I think that it's kind of abuse of the family and friends model. But it's going nowhere.
Yeah.
Right? It's a tried and true, and it's going nowhere. So anyway, we're off the main subject here, especially from an assassination attempt to, you know, failed business models. But now you know.
Yeah. Well, okay. So if we want to get out of the weeds, I'm curious, would you let me pick your brain to play the what if game? So what if Trump were to get reelected? I'm kind of curious, do you have any like predictions on where the market might kind of venture? Like what sectors might see an increase? Where might money move in the markets if change of administration? Globally, nationally, kind of talking about the whole big broad spectrum?
Yeah, I mean, I joke because I don't know anything, right?
Right.
But Can we make educated guesses and talk about it?
Yeah, did you stay at a Holiday Inn Express?
Yeah, why not? Let's give it a shot. But I'm looking at the clock right now. We're running long, so we got to grab a break.
All
right. So we'll do that. Stick around. When we come back, I play Lightning Round with Matt, and we'll see what we figure out.
I like it.
All right, stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
I guess it's dangerous to be a politician. I don't know. Yeah,
too much money on the line.
Yeah. All right. Welcome back to the True Wealth Show. You're going to have to catch the videos if you want to hear the off-screen.
The behind-the-scenes theories and deep dives.
Like what's going on. News flash, though, we're just guessing. We don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, we got the information from the news, so it's we only got so much information.
Mm-hmm.
So that narrative is alive and well.
Well, do you want to make more guesses and more shots in the
dark?
Sure,
as long as nobody's holding me accountable, let's do it.
Okay.
Right. All right. This, by the way,
this is not investment advice.
This next segment is not investment advice of any kind, and we reserve the right to be completely wrong.
Yeah. Well, let me just start in one sector. I'm just going to throw a sector out, and then you're going to tell me what your thoughts are. Are you ready?
Okay. Sure.
All right. And if you want me to start, I can. But energy. What are your thoughts on the theory of Trump gets elected? What happens to energy?
Ooh. Leading up to election, energy probably does better if we have growing economy. Initially speaking, probably volatile, maybe even down.
Okay.
Reason being that if we have a more liberal energy policy, probably drives oil prices lower.
Which is not
necessarily a driver of energy stocks higher. Now,
the
fact that it might be a little easier to put in place infrastructure, so like pipelines might be interesting because you could see something like ANWR back on the table or Keystone Pipeline back on the table. So those are.
But you're talking the actual cost of oil could go down, and we did see that under Trump.
Or we started increasing the number of leases and that are available domestically to produce power, and we saw an increase in domestic production, it could drive the prices
up. If I'm Jerome Powell and I'm the Fed and I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, well, cheap oil, that could help in a huge way bring inflation down.
It could bring inflation down
because the cost of all these goods, I mean, it's got to get shipped,
could
right?
Energy prices lower,
and
so,
but that
doesn't necessarily. Yeah, probably the input cost goes down.
Yeah,
and so that could stabilize pricing a little bit because inflation's been very challenging. But keep in mind, a lot of the inflation it's not just energy prices, it's not just input costs. It's the amount of dollars in circulation, right?
Yep.
So if you reduce the money supply, then you tend to reduce inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so. We actually want a little bit of inflation if we don't want the banking system destabilized, but we don't want the kind of inflation we've experienced the last few years. And we definitely want a handle on the total picture of inflation. Like, stop telling me like, oh, what? Inflation was only 3.1%. We're doing fine. But then food's double. I'm like, that ain't working.
Here's an area that I am completely... I don't know if ignorant is the right word, but I just don't have an opinion on which way it could go. What about infrastructure spending? I haven't looked at the numbers. I haven't kind of done the compare and contrast between what Biden's actually done for infrastructure, nor have I really looked at what Trump has done for infrastructure. Well, so that's an interesting one.
I think infrastructure is a pretty broad term.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing that I wonder about. Trump's talked a lot about like we need roads, bridges, and airports.
He has talked about that.
And so we need to put more resources toward that. But roads are state as well as federal. So
I know
it's not that
that's
simple.
A tough one. Yeah.
My suspicion is that Trump, from an economics perspective, like when we had last time, there wasn't money printing, but there was still like government spending as a form of.
Well, we saw it on the border. There was a lot of construction going on. Now, was it completely finished? No.
No, but I think that Trump being kind of a real estate builder guy and seeing. I mean, the one thing about government that's interesting is it doesn't get to depreciate things. Like when it pays for something, it just writes a check and it's done. Yeah. So I always say, like, if it buys an aircraft carrier, it just has a cost in the year that it does it. It doesn't spend it and then depreciate it over 50 years for its lifespan. Mm-hmm. So, you know, infrastructure is an interesting one. It definitely would increase deficit spending.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, would it improve GDP if that were put in place? And so I lean towards, you know, if we really did spend it on infrastructure and we didn't spend it on unions and bloat, that it would be good. But I'm kind of with you. It's like I just am so suspicious about it being really pulled off that I'm like, I don't know.
Here's one that's a weird one to me also is the defense spending, because everyone says, well, you know, Trump is a huge proponent of the military and spending there. And I look at this and I'm like, well, let's also not forget where Biden's been spending, right? Like we have seen a huge, you know, surge from companies like Raytheon who have been, you know, sending missiles to Israel, and they've been sending missiles to Ukraine. We've also seen, you know, a lot of activity over in Europe with U.S. ships that have been dealing with the stuff, the Houthis in Yemen. And we've been using a lot of missiles every day to try and ward off attacks. And so I'm like, well, I know we're spending a lot on defense now. Are we going to be spending more if Trump gets into office? I really can't tell. I have a hard time predicting that.
It's a toughie because part of it is I feel like anytime you have a budget that big, that there are areas that you could be more efficient, period.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And one of the things about government that I don't know how to solve is the issue that when a government spends money, if it does not spend it, it tends not to be reapportioned the next time. So that sort of is held against a government
like
agency.
It encourages more and more spending.
Yeah, so essentially you have to spend all of it so that you get reapportioned that and then some more next time.
Yeah.
And so it sort of incentivizes aggressive spending and not looking for sales. Right. And the other thing is that the government largely operates under the premise of like a prevailing wage and so forth. So it's never going to look for the low bid per se. It's going to look for the bid that follows the parameters that sort of meet what the government perceives as fairness doctrine.
Right.
So those all add to cost.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we just know, too, like when was the last time we had a defense contractor that stayed on budget? Right. It's like, oh, we're going to build a plane. But there were change orders, and now by the time we're done with it, that plane's 2-3 times more than we ever thought it would be. And what do you? Well, we'll just stop if you want. And we're like, well, no, we spent this much. We got to finish. So, you know, it's kind of silly.
All right. Well, I've grilled you on defense, energy, and infrastructure. What just talk to me freely, I guess, about kind of some other areas that your mind goes to when you think about how policies might change or how the economy might shift slightly.
Well, I think there's two big regimes kind of playing out here. One of them is more of a globalist regime, and one of them is more of a nationalist regime. Neither means that you're exclusively one or the other, right? But globalist regime, I think about it more like, let's try to coordinate both our policies and our the compliance and regulation so that it's happening at an international level. Let's try to, you know, create global carbon standards, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
And so if we get everybody to behave a certain way, then, you know, we'll all be better off. And so that is a different tack. And the reason this is sort of challenging is we're not all starting at the same place, right? We have disparate resources. And so then people try to say, well, then why don't we try to rebalance the resources too? And we'll shift from those with more to those with less to try to make this all work. And it sounds nice. But then you end up with the argument of like, well, why is it that we can send bazillions of dollars overseas and our veterans are starving, right? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a valid question. Then the flip side of it is the concept of more of a nationalist, which is we're less concerned about the global standards. You other countries are going to do which is best for you, and we're going to fix, just kind of do what's best for us. And when we can get along and help, and when it's in our interest, we will.
Yeah, and I think just my natural disposition on that, the United States tends to want to try and drive or be the influential figure in global policy and changing the way that the world does things, right?
Well, it's a mixed bag if you consider economically speaking. Mm-hmm. It's probably in our interest to be at the tip of the spear driving global economic influence, right? I mean, that's probably true. And we have a lot of alliances with other countries where they essentially rent our military from us, right? So they don't carry much of a military
presence.
But
they don't really pay for it.
Well, they don't, but they do in like Japan doesn't have a significant military presence, mm-hmm. but they have a very strong alliance with us post-World War II,
mm-hmm.
right? So the Marshall Plan and rebuilding them and maintaining diplomatic relations, we sort of do the military thing and we get cooperation from each other. So they don't need a significant military because we're allies. And
right.
in return, they do some things that we can't and vice versa. And we're relatively decent trade partners.
Yeah.
Right.
And they send us a few Hondas.
Right. And so and there's always going to be a little bit of a push and pull because they're still sovereign. They can do their own thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a purely like do what we say relationship. It's a can we all agree that this is still kind of the thing which we want to do? And sometimes it's like, no, we can't agree. And somebody goes, can we agree because we have this leverage? And then they go, yeah, I guess we can agree. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, so that's sort of foreign policy. It's like a lot of times you don't get what you want. The United States can be the bully a lot of the time.
And I think we sometimes take advantage of that a little bit.
There's no question that the United States is a bully at times.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes being a bully, though, is probably in the world's best interest. It sounds arrogant, right? That sounds like the kind of comment you'd say, well, you know, you're an elitist for saying that. And I would say that is kind of an elitist comment. However, I'm referencing primarily human rights issues, where the United States is like, look, we're going to be champions of human rights, and other countries are not. Mm-hmm. And I go, well, it may be elitist, but I don't care.
Yeah.
You know?
So I love that you don't have to apologize for that when you're like, well, it's true. So
yeah.
There you go.
So anyway, those are the two bigger regimes that I think we're seeing here. I don't see a domestic focused or more of a nationalist regime being anti-global, but just being, look, we need to take care of
our. Are you saying that you think if Trump gets in, he'll be more?
I think Trump's more nationalist,
okay,
for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's much stronger in terms of foreign policy and saying, let's just have a big stick rather than have a war, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that he's much more willing to do that to kind
to
of
throw some
control.
Threats out on the table, and it's like, well, you might look like a bully or act like one,
right.
But
I also think that tends to stabilize our economy somewhat if we're mm-hmm. more energy independent. And so, you know, I think what we saw before, we'd see kind of a trend toward that, hopefully minus a pandemic.
Yeah, that would be nice,
right?
Because that was not fun to go through.
No doubt. I think we have one last break. I'm looking at the clock.
Oh, my gosh, we do.
Scrambling.
We do, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and it turns out, well, there's some kind of... what do we call it? It sounds like a
I'd
warning.
Love...
No, it's like a warning going on. So, again, those of you on the recording, we're waiting on, hey, this is just an emergency broadcast. Sounds like, I don't know what we just got. There we go. And the beeps. This will make for a very interesting edit later, guys. Especially because...
is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Show. Just a few minutes left. And again, if you're joining us late, you know, that's cool. Grab the podcast. We'll post it in the next day or so at littlejohnfs.com, and you can get caught up on all the shenanigans here.
Yeah.
But so, Matt, what's the summary today?
Like, I think
the shot heard around the world?
Yeah, and I think one of the big takeaways was the stock market didn't react nearly quite like a lot of people thought that it would.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we're still mourning those that, you know, lost their life in the event and stuff. And it was pretty tragic to watch. But our takeaways from this were trying to look at, you know, what type of impact does this have on the market? And then kind of looking forward to say, okay, well, what if Trump does win the election? What could that hold for the stock market? And it might not be as radical as a lot of people think. Mm-hmm. There might be some sectors that thrive, maybe some that have a little bit of a pullback. It remains to be seen. The best we can do is guess. Make educated guesses.
Let me throw something out there for everybody to consider. What if the presidency was less impactful to your investments than you think?
That's where my mind's at. Okay. Yeah.
You know, here's a couple of key data points. And by the way, if you're interested in this stuff, I'd also encourage you to go to our website and get onto our mailing list, because we send out sort of updates and things like this a lot. So we're about to send one out to just give some perspective on like the markets at large, how they've been kind of driven by just a handful of stocks lately. Diversification has seemed less en vogue, but it seems to be returning as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of stuff like that. But I will tell you that the jury's still out, but largely speaking, when the country spends money on a credit card, the market goes up. That happens in both Republican and Democrat regimes.
Yep. Okay?
And so there's not a huge causal link between political party and your investment success. If we were reading the tea leaves right now, I'm not making an investment or a guarantee, but it sure looks like there's wind in the sails of this market. And there may continue to be, because the government's going to keep spending, and because to the extent that we can make the books look good, everybody wants to try to convince people the economy's in pretty good shape. That's why you need to keep us in office.
Right.
Right? And the other party's going to try to throw rocks, but they would really like the economy good so that they can show up and take credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we tend to have short memories as voters. So I think in the end, once we get past this election, then we can figure out what the market's really going to look at.
Yeah.
But right now, we're all going to kind of wonder if there's going to be a major change in policy. And the good news is, I think the Fed's going to be relatively silent. And if that's the case, that is generally a good sign for the markets that we can price in at least the next few months of just business as.
Yeah.
So I think that's the main takeaway, right?
And I think that's fair.
If you want to know how that works in your world, give us a call. In the last few seconds, Matt, how do they reach us?
541-375-0898.
All right. Well, until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN and 93.9. That's the one, yeah. All right. We'll catch you next time. See you.